A warm welcome to the CARE podcast, CARE in Action. Today we have a very interesting guest and I'm personally very pleased about having him join our podcast today, Professor Radkolb. Let me introduce him briefly. He is the director of the Department of Contemporary History at the University of Vienna. He is the chairman of the Academic Committee of the House of European History in Brussels, the chairman of the International Scientific Advisory Board of the Austrian House of History in Vienna, and the executive director of the Bruno Kreisky Foundation for Services to Human Rights. Today, we invited him to CARE to speak about the significance and historical dimension of the very famous CARE package. Professor, in a few days, it will be exactly 75 years ago that the first CARE packages arrived at the Franz Josef railway station in Vienna. At the time, Vienna was considered the hungriest city in Europe. Can you tell us a little bit, although of course not from your own experience, what the situation back then was like for the Viennese?
Thank you. I would also like to warmly welcome you and thank you very much for this invitation. CARE has a very important place in the early history of the Austrian Second Republic. Let us briefly try to put this into historical context. Today's Austria was severely affected in many areas by the Second World War. Above all, large urban centers, railway hubs, and Vienna in particular. The liberation of Vienna by the Red Army then led to further destruction at the last minute due to the resistance of the Wehrmacht and the SS. Austria was actually divided until the autumn of 1945. On the one hand, there was the Soviet occupation zone, which meant that Vienna, Lower Austria and Burgenland, which had not yet been established, by the way, and a small part of Upper Austria were under Soviet administration. The rest of Austria was divided between the Americans, the British and the French. There was an almost impenetrable border along the river Enns. The supply situation in eastern Austria, and especially in Vienna, was catastrophic. A consequence of the war, of looting not only by soldiers of the Red Army, but also by the civilian population. The strict National Socialist rationing system collapsed. It was to take months, despite efforts by the Red Army, such as the so-called May Donation, which was the distribution of previously confiscated foodstuffs to Vienna and its surrounding areas, until in 1946-47, the food situation slowly somewhat improved again. The situation for children was particularly catastrophic. The mortality rate of infants and small children exploded to three times that of the interwar period, and all the memoirs show how difficult the situation was. Slowly, food began to arrive in Vienna, either through hoarding trips or deliveries from Lower Austria and Burgenland. However, in terms of food supplies, it was a disastrous situation that only really starts to ease in 1947, 48, 49. There are still real hunger demonstrations in Vienna in 1946 to 47. We must also not forget that there were hundreds of thousands of refugees. I mention here the expelled Volksdeutsche, or ethnic Germans, who were German-speaking minorities in other European countries such as Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and Poland, and who were expelled from these countries in large numbers from 1945 to 48. This led to additional burdens in the food sector. The first CARE packages were really also packages for survival. However, even more important was the psychological effect of these CARE packages. From the end of 1946, Austria received a total of 1 million CARE packages out of the 10 million CARE packages that went to Europe, mostly Germany and Austria. So, a very large number. In the beginning, the packages were addressed very personally to individuals, and this made the recipients feel that there were people out there who cared for them. Suddenly, the world looked at Austria again and made an effort to help. I believe that in the initial phase, the CARE packages were very important bridging measures. After all, one could live from one CARE package for 10 days as an adult, although most of the time it was stretched out and divided up in the family. Yet, after this initial phase, the psychological component was actually even more important and fit in very well with the Marshall Plan aid from 1947 to 48.
You are addressing an incredibly important issue that is actually still ongoing today. The CARE package is back due to the corona pandemic. Food and hygiene articles are being distributed again. However, it is very important to keep in mind that people do not live on basic foodstuffs alone. In such a situation, they also need this psychosocial component. that someone in another country is thinking of them. Austria was absolutely devastated. I only know the stories from my grandparents and my father. My grandmother often told me that the contents of the package were, as you described, stretched out to meet the needs of the family. It was kept and preserved. It was something special. This means that even with today's modern aid after catastrophes like in Syria, where we are talking about 10 years of war, it is very important not to forget that people do not live on basic foodstuffs alone, but also need spiritual nourishment.
It really has to be said that the Americans understood this perfectly. There was a big PR campaign around the care package, similar to the Marshall Plan, the European Recovery Program, and it also had the big goal of creating peace. We must not forget that Nazi Germany waged war against almost all of Europe between 1939 and 1945. The Americans entered this war belatedly, but nevertheless. This means that for many years, in Austria since 1938, the population was exposed to nationalist propaganda with images of the enemy. The fact that it was possible in Europe, for example, to bridge the Franco-German animosity from the 19th century so quickly, and that it was possible to establish the European Economic Community in 1956 on the basis of the coal and steel community, is also related to this psychology. The care package was also a peace offering and a very humane offer. Western democracy immediately tried to get closer to the former enemies. I believe that especially in areas like Syria, that are experiencing a horrendous civil war, it is very important to show solidarity from the outside in order to create a kind of ethical, psychological basis for peace. I have just sent off a court report in which I dealt intensively with the enemy stereotypes of National Socialist propaganda on America, the Americans, and the Jews and Freemasons. That it was possible to dismantle these enemy stereotypes so quickly after 1945, at least on a pragmatic level, is another merit of the care packages. The care packages went to the people even more than the Marshall Plan aid, which went mainly to companies, despite the purchase of foodstuffs, etc. I believe that this is still a very important function of care today. That is why I believe that this anniversary must be discussed in detail, in order to raise awareness for the present. Our grandparents and parents really received a lot of help after the Second World War. Today, we live in a very privileged situation. In a situation that no one could have imagined in 1945. At the time, Austria saw 1 million refugees alone, displaced persons, deported persons, forced laborers, and slave laborers. When we look at Austria today, we are actually playing in a completely different league, but our sense of solidarity and humanity does not correspond to what our grandparents and parents experienced themselves.
My father was 7 years old when the first care package arrived in Vienna, and his Viennese parents sent him to the countryside to his grandparents in Lower Austria, where they were able to provide him with some food. You already mentioned it at the beginning. Was the situation on the farms a bit different when compared to the big city of Vienna? Was there less of a struggle for survival there? How would you assess this from today's perspective?
It is the rural population that is favored in every war situation. We see this after the First World War, when high prices on the black market led to violent clashes. The same thing happened in 1945, but to a somewhat lesser extent. It was always a question of supplying the large centers. It took some time until this worked. It was not until autumn 1945 that there was a government responsible for the whole of Austria, which then also prepared the first national council elections in November 1945, starting from October the same year. We can gather the general atmosphere at the time from the way the polling stations looked that winter. The famous speech by Federal Chancellor Leopold Figl at Christmas 1945 is, I think, a good example of this catastrophic, disastrous situation. In this respect, precisely in 1946, these signals from the United States were particularly important. In this context, the private initiatives behind care, that is, not only government organizations, but also business people, individuals who joined forces, who also invented the framework, in other words, this public-private partnership was also, I believe, a very essential element of care after 1946 until 1955.
This means that the care package is still remembered by many people today, not only because it was part of the Marshall Plan and helped a lot after the war, but also because of its emotional component that was passed on within the family, even over generations.
Exactly. It is this individual memory that we usually underestimate, that is very strong in families in a positive and negative sense. Prejudices can also be transported. But in this case, it is a positive memory that is then passed on in the families. What does not really work in the present is to make people aware that there was massive help for Austria in 1945 until well into the 1940s and 1950s. In my opinion, that is primarily the task of politicians, but also of the media. Even though Austria was part of the German war machine, even though there were Nazi concentration camps and many sub-camps on Austrian territory, war crimes and much more, nevertheless, the former enemies very quickly developed this solidarity and awareness that we have to and should build something together. Today, however, we lack the feeling that our families, parents, grandparents, great-grandparents have received a lot. We give back too little. Although Austrians are actually willing to donate, but this acceptance, this awareness of helping in international conflicts, is not really pronounced. In this context, European politics is always called upon to simply make it clear that the war in the Middle East, for example, is a war in Europe. We always have the tendency to think that the Mediterranean and Greece and the so-called Balkans are all so far away. At the same time, we get on a plane and fly to these crisis areas within a very short time. Well, in better times. And another important aspect is missing in our minds, that this is something that creates security for us. We need to commit to civil war zones, to at least attempt to regulate conflicts, and then to create a common future in the best sense of the word. In the 1970s, this was still a topic under discussion in Austria. I recall the policy of the Federal Chancellor Bruno Kreisky at the time, who desperately tried to make it clear at the Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe that we Europeans must get involved in the conflict in the Middle East. Otherwise, we ourselves would be affected by it. I hope for a new generation, for a new spirit of Europe, and that one day there will be a consciousness of responsibility for this region of Europe that goes beyond the classical continental European borders.
Especially as these surroundings are at our doorstep. We see all the refugee camps that are springing up on the borders of Europe. CARE works in a refugee camp in Bosnia near the border. I think it is a very interesting phenomenon that on the one hand we appreciate globalization and on the other hand we ignore whole segments of it. The awareness that we were helped a lot after the Second World War, I think, is still very much present in some people and is also passed on. But if you have never seen it and never known it, then you tend to think that none of this can ever happen to us. Through my work, I've always been active in the humanitarian field. I know that anything can happen to anyone at any time and that we are all very much interconnected. The refugee flows that we discuss so heatedly politically, where do you think the refugees come from? No one flees for fun or because they want to go somewhere else. People are largely forced to do so. I completely agree. This is a massive problem and these 75 years are not the reason for us to celebrate. But to point out that it is important not only to stand in solidarity, but we have to do something concrete that is also in our own interest.
With COVID-19, we as a society simply stood by at the beginning, from politicians to the individual citizens, until we recognized the extent of the pandemic, a global disease. Therefore, I increasingly have the feeling that, economically, we like to live turbo-globalization, but we are not at all ready for it in our heads. I also believe, and this is a responsibility of politicians in my opinion, that we need turbo-globalization in the area of our education system as well. It starts in kindergarten and continues in primary school. We talk about the history of our town, and we dutifully paint the coats of arms of the federal provinces and the red-white-red flag of Austria. I did this too. But we live in a different world today, and that is not only the European Union. It would be a great challenge to consider which elements of global understanding are needed to find one's way in the 21st century. And, I say this quite consciously, to survive after COVID-19. We could have spared ourselves a lot if we had thought a little more historically. We only have to look at the Spanish flu, which towards the end of the First World War, coming from the United States, quickly reached Europe, mainly hitting cities in Great Britain, but also Vienna. My own great-grandfather, who moved from Graz to Vienna as a newly retired teacher and school inspector, fell victim to it. But we lack both the historical awareness and the awareness that we live in a completely different world and that we have to think and act globally. In this respect, a curriculum that deals with CARE's experiences in the past, but especially in the present, would be just as important as other issues of turbo-globalization. Actually, our curricula at all levels, down to primary school, should be completely revised. They are far too narrow, far too nationalistic, and actually entirely unsuitable in the 21st century. But that will still take some time.
Because I cannot choose and say, today I live in Austria, tomorrow in the European Union, and then I'll be global if I want to go on holiday somewhere. Instead, we are in a global interconnected world, and everything that affects anyone on this planet can also affect us directly. Moreover, I think we are so much better informed about everything these days. This has also changed in the last 75 years. The speed with which we know about disasters today, we are completely filled in on what is happening anywhere in the world in a matter of seconds. As I have already said several times over the last few days, the care package is more topical than ever. You have mentioned the pandemic several times, which does not completely undo all the development goals previously achieved, but it does have a negative impact. Hunger is on the rise again, which means that food will have to be distributed again. Food prices are overshooting. The food prices are now 7 times higher than before the pandemic. For people who were already living in precarious poverty conditions before, which massively affects millions of people in developing countries, but also in countries that are economically better situated, it really is a further push to the margins of society. CARE's work, therefore, has a highly socio-political dimension. That is clear, even though we are politically independent. You mentioned very interestingly this partnership between the private sector and the state. The Marshall Plan also was a private initiative initially, and then part of state aid. At CARE, this public-private partnership is still the backbone of our work today. We are absolutely dependent on private individuals to support us. Still, about 2/3 of the funding that we work with in our projects comes from the European Union, and another portion comes from the Austrian federal government. This demonstrates that this public-private partnership idea is a central theme at CARE from the very beginning. Was that actually something relatively new at the time?
No, large relief efforts already existed after the First World War. For example, soup kitchens from the United States that even reached the Waldviertel region in Lower Austria, or Swiss relief efforts. But the professionalism and the large quantity of the care packages is a new phenomenon. And another new aspect is the positive psychological message that is associated with it, which I believe is also the future. Something that has certainly changed at CARE, and that I find very positive, is that CARE is now responding in a more differentiated way to the needs on the ground, working together with local NGOs and trying to escape corrupt political structures in order to get to the people directly. This includes providing them with the support they need to get back on their feet and help themselves. And something else that I really like about CARE, because it is very important, is this focus on women and girls. This was not yet the case after 1945, and I think it is a key message. At the end of the day, with turbo-globalization, whether in the South or the North or in the whole world, the only thing that really helps to cope with the negative effects, as well as the positive ones, is education, education, education. Therefore, also in this respect, the focus on women and girls is essential in the activities of CARE worldwide today. This is a beautiful arc, from a different education in our country, an education for or against turbo-globalization, in order to cope with it, and at the same time to support and promote education in the affected countries, in these societies. If we were to create this educational bridge, I believe we would find it much easier to cope with the world of the future, including the great central challenge that also concerns your work, namely the climate crisis.
Absolutely, and in a way we also see ourselves as bridge builders. Austria was one of the centers of care packages. We have already mentioned that the last care package was distributed in Austria in 1955, so over a long period of 9 years. At that time, the care packages were adjusted to include specific care packages for tailors, care packages for handicrafts, and care packages for schools, so that people could pursue their income-generating activities again to some extent. Today, Care Austria is part of a worldwide confederation, which has also changed. Back in the day, all care packages came from Care USA. Today, this is no longer the case. While the United States is still our largest member, we are now a global confederation where some countries such as Thailand, India and Indonesia have become members themselves. The whole North-South divide is shifting massively. Care, and this is important and good, has made enormous steps in the development sector. As you rightly say, we also have a certain role to play in the effects of the global climate crisis. We will only be able to deal with this globally and not as a country or as the European Union alone. As I understand it, there is a lot of misinformation under discussion because this issue has to be tackled globally. There is no other way. But I would still like to ask you. It is clear that the care packages have a very positive reputation. But have they really been met with undivided enthusiasm in all parts of the Austrian population, or has there also been some criticism?
There was, of course, a political debate initiated primarily by the Communist Party, which was a small party but had a powerful media apparatus, with a radio program in the first Austrian radio station, RAWAG, and the party-led daily newspaper Volksstimme, or People's Voice. The Soviet occupying power also saw this primarily as a propaganda tool. There were political disputes. Certainly one problem in Austria was that most of the aid went to urban areas. Over time, however, the positive content of the care packages became evident. An important difference to the Marshall Plan was that the Marshall Plan was very political. Hardly any Marshall Plan funds could go to the Soviet zone. That meant parts of Lower Austria, Vienna and Burgenland. Care was more open-minded. There was no political west-east border. That is why the care packages were better distributed. For Vienna in particular, but you also find care packages in Burgenland, for example, this was an important signal for survival and a signal that the future could be mastered together and that this was not about punishment for the Second World War. This punishment idea was still very much present in the political debate after the First World War. This time, it was about building a common future. It is a fact that very soon, from 1947 at the latest, the Cold War also played a role. Yet I believe that, for care in particular, it was possible to overcome these zonal borders better than was the case with the Marshall Plan.
Finally, I would like to ask you, because it has been on my mind the whole time now, a Marshall Plan for the whole of Africa was discussed a few years ago, yet globally speaking, it seems like we are no longer very successful in peacemaking. The number of chronic conflicts, they are not such huge wars, but they are just as bad for the people they affect, is increasing. You can name the Middle East almost entirely, Yemen, also a kind of proxy war, and South Sudan. There are these conflict areas everywhere that last for years and present us with enormous challenges, in addition to natural disasters such as tsunamis and earthquakes. Why are we no longer very successful today in this regard? There is a heated debate about whether development cooperation is an instrument of foreign policy or not. We are not really doing well anymore, are we?
I will give you a paradoxical answer. During the Cold War, as absurd as it sounds, the world was better regulated. On the one hand, we faced the possibility of a total nuclear catastrophe due to the excessive arms race of the two superpowers and nuclear powers that existed internationally. But on the other hand, especially in the 1960s and 70s, attempts were made to regulate conflicts through a policy of détente. In other words, joint activities were undertaken so that when certain conflicts escalated, such as the one between Israel and her Arab neighbors, the Palestinian question, a way could be found by the Soviet Union and the United States to at least regulate the situation in such a way that it would not totally explode and spread like wildfire. Since the end of the Cold War, The world has become more complex. I think we stumbled into this situation very euphorically and naively, without seeing that certain political structures and attitudes do not disappear overnight. This applies to the United States just as much as to the former Soviet Union, today's Russian Federation. For a long time, we completely ignored the fact that China has become a strategically very skillful global power, with her own interests also in the economic field in Africa, in terms of resources. However, even on our doorstep, in Hungary, there were demonstrations against a new Chinese university yesterday, after the Central European University had literally been driven out of Budapest and had to relocate to Vienna. I think the difficulty is that there's too little awareness among the central actors or players that ultimately everyone is affected by turbo globalization.
Is there a lack of foresight?
The national agenda is too strong everywhere. The European Union must also be held accountable for this. The EU also thinks too much in European national terms. The Americans are beginning to change a little, but with Trump it was pure nationalism, so to speak. In the case of the Russian Federation, after the trauma of the collapse of the Soviet Union and the attempt to show strength again through a new nationalism, there is a need for new regulations. There is a need for new regulatory mechanisms, similar to those used in the policy of détente in the 1960s and 70s. It took a long time before that worked. In my opinion, the European Union has a great responsibility here, an opportunity that it unfortunately does not take. It still does not see itself as a global player, although economically, it is a global player. And a way must be found either to bring China on board or to disclose China's geostrategic interests and to find a way of dialogue here. This also applies to the Russian Federation. I believe that a new policy of détente is needed in turbo-globalization. There are still no suitable structures for this. Of course, the United Nations. But I am skeptical as to whether it is the right player. My hope is that this will come one day. And there are first signs of this, strangely enough, in the economic sphere, with the attempt to introduce at least a minimum tax globally, which could also help to reduce this ever-widening north-south divide, especially against the backdrop that the pressure of the climate crisis is growing. This affects the Russian Federation just as much as China. Some time ago, I dealt very intensively with 1989. And it is often forgotten, especially in the Baltic states, that environmental issues were an important element of mobilization against the communist regime. One should not forget that once great numbers of people are directly affected by the climate crisis, there is a possibility for something to happen politically in this direction as well. I believe we need to demand and hope for a new policy of détente. This means taking joint responsibility for the settlement of conflicts. It worked for a while with Iran and the nuclear disarmament program, where Vienna played the role of the host. We simply have to continue working in this direction and put an end to these proxy conflicts that we also saw during the Cold War. The second element, and here the Europeans, the Americans, the Russians, and the Chinese are also fully responsible, is this excessive military buildup. As long as this does not stop, there will be conflicts. The weapons will be used. The latest invention, which is disastrous for the civilian population, are these cheap drones, some of which are already being produced in Turkey, a NATO member. So as long as this does not stop, I think we are going around in circles. We are demanding putting an end to this, and at the same time, everyone is earning fortunes with it. So there are many issues, and the strange thing is that we are actually back in the 1960s.
That is actually a bit frightening, but we do not want to end this discussion on a negative note. My personal takeaway from our discussion today is that global organizations, non-governmental organizations like CARE, will definitely play a leading role in the future, and that they will be important partners for the European Union, which is the world's largest donor for international development cooperation. If CARE can contribute constructively with humanitarian aid and with training and all the other aspects of a modern development approach today, then this is already a huge achievement. Thank you very much, Professor Radkolb, for taking the time for this highly interesting discussion.
Thank you very much for the invitation and all the best for your future work.